Hello and good day, everyone. It's Kevin Finkel, and this is another episode of Magic the First Pioneers podcast. It's a podcast all about the MTG Pioneer format, where we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I am joined by my co-host and a special guest.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ryan Schwenk. I'm the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan, and today's guest is someone that needs no introduction. Well, actually, maybe needs a little bit of introduction. Ikaros MTG or Amit. So, hello, Amit.
Hello, hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks for coming on so late. It's got to be like really, after midnight there, I think?
It is 1 a.m. and 15 minutes, and it has been a long day.
Are you up for this? Do you have enough energy?
Oh, yeah. I always have energy to talk about Magic and Pioneer specifically. I love some Pioneer.
Okay, great, great. So, Kevin, what's our topic today?
Yeah. So what we are doing is we kind of wanted to do a year in review 2020. So just talk a little bit about what were kind of the big highs from 2020. Go over some of the decks, the cards, the experience of Pioneer in 2020. And, we've got a bit of an outline, but we kind of wanted to just go through and reminisce a little bit to talk about what we think the best things were, and then maybe look a little bit ahead towards the future. You know, this is coming out before... Yeah, I think we just started Kaldheim when we're recording this, so...
We just started and that's spoilers. Only like
the preview.
Yeah.
Haven't even gotten any spoilers yet, but kind of the last... we're wrapping up the last season of 2020, and we want to see what 2020 looked like in hindsight.
So I just wanted to say something real quick. So I was listening to some other content the other day. I think MTG Goldfish was also had like a similar idea to do this year in the review. And they were going to talk about Pioneer, but they ended up talking about Standard for about 95% of the show. So, great. You know, no one else has done this topic yet, basically.
All right, so we'll tweet them out after the show and be like, hey, guys, we talked about what you forgot.
Yes, exactly.
We got your back.
Yeah. Okay, so first topic. I'd like to talk about how did Pioneer start at the beginning of 2020? You know, it was announced... In October, we had tons of bands and stuff in like November and December. But what was the situation with Pioneer, you know, like in January, February? What did you guys see happening at that time?
So I think for me, the big experience was that, so as you said, like a lot of bannings in like November and December, we had tons of events on Magic Online, but no real like big paper event for Pioneer. So the format was going through a bunch of shakeups. And I think like the beginning of 2020 was basically just the format like trying to understand, like people trying to understand what's good after all the broken stuff got banned. Like, you know, Field of the Dead, Oko, all of these like disgusting cards are not legal anymore. And now people are figuring it out. So I was actually preparing for GP Brussels. I was there. And the decks, like the big decks, were like Mono Green Ramp and Vampires and Blue White Control and like Spirits. But that didn't last long, right?
Actually,
and, like Chunky Red even? Was that still around?
What?
Was like a big red or
Chunky Red? Still they called it Chunky Red.
Chunky Red. Yeah. That's what I like to call it too.
Yeah, I think Mono Green Ramp, there was like the not the Karn version. It was like the other version.
Yeah.
Like when you straight up get to Ugin and Ulamog.
I'm talking like 137. It's kind of like Tron, where you go like Grazer, Cultivate, then you had those cards. So like,
and then Uro came out, and then anyways.
Well, Theros Beyond Death came out, and a lot of things happened with that.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, like you said, a lot of people were just trying to find out what was good. I think like every week or every other week we had like a new top format. Everyone's like, oh, I hate this deck. It has to be banned. It's too strong. And then another deck took its place, you know, the week after.
Little did they know when Thassa's Oracle came out.
Oh, yeah.
But I would say it was overall positive. A lot of my friends were really excited at the beginning of the year. We had Magic Fest Nagoya happening over here in Japan, and everybody I knew went there. All my old Frontier friends, my friends that love Standard, that you know, wanted
was
to play
that
the format.
Was that the Magic Fest that had the original Pro Tour Players Tour? Is that the one?
There was a Players Tour at that same weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also there was one in Brussels and Phoenix, right? That.
Yeah, so Brussels and Nagoya were the same weekend, and Phoenix was like a week or two after those, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So it was cool. I got to see like Christian Calcono and talk to some of the other pros. I think I met Alexander Hain that weekend and talked a little bit. I recommended some of my favorite places in Nagoya because I used to live there for 6 years.
Sweet.
So, yeah, good times. But, yeah, like I said, Pioneer was in a good spot, I think, at the beginning of the year after the bannings. Yeah, I know Mono Black was really good at that time as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as good as
Black, Black or Vampires.
When?
Yeah. Black or Vampires, either one of them.
Yeah, I think people were really excited about Pioneer at that point because the format really felt brand new. I mean, we had that format for, like, 2 months at that point, but it went through so much bannings and like iterations that it just felt still like you could find new things to do. And I think that's what ended up actually happening at Brussels and in Nagoya.
And I think, was it from Brussels where the Sultai Delirium started to kind of take shape, I believe? You get a new archetype forming?
Yeah, I actually think I think both Nagoya and Brussels actually cemented like the metagame as we knew it for like the following half a year or maybe a bit more, because what actually happened is this, as far as I remember. So up, like, people knew about the Heliod Ballista combo coming into those like players tours, right? And people knew this was kind of the deck to beat, but there was also talk about Inverter being really, really good, and that's the deck that like basically canister tuned from almost bottom to top, and that was like the breakout deck of that weekend, as far as I remember, playing in the PTQs and like watching the GP and the Players Tour. That deck just took the format by storm. It was by far the best thing to be doing that weekend. But the winner of Brussels was Larsson on Sultai Delirium, which was basically, I think, his deck. I don't think it was anyone who was playing it before.
Yeah, I heard like the Swedish Sultai was the nickname.
Swedish Sultai.
I mean, it's kind of a deck, you know, started the format when it had Oko and everything like that. But yeah, as soon as Oko got banned, it really dropped off,
I think. Yeah. And then in Nagoya, the black-white Auras deck showed up, right?
Yeah, so I think his name was Ken Yukihiro, Yeah, he's like, you know, I'm just going to take all these commons and make this deck for $50 and, you know, oh, hey, look, I made top eight. So I thought that was hilarious, to be honest, to be able to bring such a budget deck and do so well, you know, to such a, you know, high competition or
like
at honestly, such a high level competition.
Yeah, honestly, Ken is a genius deck builder. I mean, he has some really insane decks. He had some really cool decks in the past, and he just did it again. Basically, Auras, Black White Auras still is a thing in Pioneer a year later, which is pretty insane for the number of changes the format went through this past year.
So I feel like we're jumping over a quick point here is that, you know, first big thing that happened in the year is that Theros Beyond Death came out, and that's where a lot of these decks we're talking about came out. A lot of the new enchantment creatures, a lot of the combo pieces, so Thassa's Oracle, the Heliod as part of the Heliod combo, as well as, we didn't get to it yet, but Underworld Breach, all came out through that set.
Yeah, that was all of the, in January. It's basically the same time, you know, we got another one coming up here next January, so this was like a week before, I think, a week or two before. So nobody really had that really fine-tuned deck yet. So I guess, yeah, if we move forward a little bit to February, I think that's really when decks like Inverter and Ballista and Lotus Combo kind of, you know, gained a really strong foothold. Well, I forgot, was it Pro Tour had like 6 Inverter decks in the top 8? Do you guys remember that?
I don't think it was the Pro Tour. Like the, was you mean like the Brussels? Players Tour? Like Brussels? The
Players? Yeah, it's renamed.
Sorry,
it's
not Players Tour anymore.
Is there even a Players Tour anymore? Never mind.
That's who knows? Too,
Pro Championship?
Yeah.
Too big of a topic. I think it was, I don't think it took as many spots in the top eight of Brussels. I think it was just Canister who top eighted with Inverter, but it basically took over the format from that point on.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I was going to say, and if we want to talk more about the deck, maybe we should just kind of talk about all these new decks that came out of 2020, you know, starting with, you know, blue-black Inverter combo.
Yeah.
That one of the biggest ones. Once Thassa's Oracle was printed, you know, we had, you know, a really good way to win instantly. And then, what, later that year we had War? But didn't War this break was last year?
No, War was before that. Yeah. War was so we had, end of 2019.
Yeah, so they had Jace already, but they didn't think about adding him because, yeah. So, yeah, let's talk about that. Do you want to talk a little bit about Inverter? Let's talk about all these new decks that came in 2020.
Yeah, so Inverter, for those of you who don't know the deck, basically plays the card Inverter of Truths. This is an Eldrazi. It costs black, black, and two. It's a 6/6 flying trample for four, which is a really good rate. But what it does when it enters the battlefield, you have to exile your whole deck and make your graveyard into your like deck. So you basically get very few cards left in your deck, which is usually a big downside because if they kill your creature now, you're going to have a hard time killing them. What this deck did, though, was utilize both Thassa's Oracle and Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, to win when you have no cards in your deck. And the deck could usually set up a really fast kill by using Dig Through Time to empty the yard. So you would usually end up like not even letting your opponent untap. You would just go end of turn 5, Dig Through Time, empty the yard, untap, 6 mana, Inverter, Thassa's Oracle, kill you. And the fact that the combo is kind of like Splinter Twin in the sense that the combo didn't take up much space in the deck. And the cards themselves were like legit magic cards. So you could play this control game, but you don't actually have to control the entire game. You just have to set up this combo kill, which is really weird to interact with.
It was difficult. I was like, I'm going to Thassa's. I'm going to get rid of your graveyard. They're like, thank you very much. I combo easier now.
Yeah, like people used to bring in to sideboard in Rest in Peace versus this deck. And when I was playing it, I would be like, thank you. I can now just kill you on turn 6.
Exactly. Hate it. I hate it. It's so hard to play. So that was one of your favorite decks, though, right?
Yeah. So basically what happened, I was locked on Vampires for GP Brussels. I was playing this in the PDQs. But after the GP, when like Inverter Bridge and Heliod became so popular, I just realized Vampires can't compete. And I picked up Inverter, and I ended up having a lot of fun with it and winning quite a bit with it at that time. Because I do think the deck was just very, very, very good. We could talk later about whether the deck was like too good or not too good, but
yeah, that's the next topic.
But like the deck was clearly tier one, partially because it was so strong, but also because, as you mentioned, it was so hard to play against, and it took people time to adapt to it. And when they did, they could beat it. So that was, for me, maybe like the deck that defined Pioneer from that point on. Yeah, I am a bit biased, of course, but like for me, that was the best deck in Pioneer.
So, Kevin, what about you? Do you want to choose a deck to talk about? What's another new archetype that we got in 2020?
So I feel like it was just picking up at the beginning of 2020, almost even before we had Theros Beyond Death. But I feel like one of the decks of the year for me was Niv-Mizzet.
We kind of had it a little bit, though, right? Like at the end of the year?
We kind of had it, and it was never really particularly good. And then some of the final unfair stuff got banned out. And what we were left with is a format where a lot of people were playing very fair things. So before Theros came and shook everything up, we had, you know, those black decks and the vampire decks. We had red decks playing Chandra and Glorybringer. And people just dropped a 6/6 on them that drew four cards, and they could not compete at all. So that was really the deck that kind of blew open the fair decks of the format and kind of led us into 2020. And it's really held on. You know, it's a deck that continues to be strong. Hasn't been overwhelming, I think, at any point, other than really pushing those couple decks out. But it's something that held on through the combo decks. it's held on now that the combo decks are more out of the format. So it's really been kind of just a nice staple of 2020 and really first showed up this year.
So not so much a new archetype, but an archetype that came into its own.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it.
We talked a little bit about SRAM auras already, and like I said, I like those budget decks that can do well. I don't know if we really need to talk about it that much. Basically, you just play a whole bunch of auras and SRAM, the Master Artificer, I think that's his name, I can't remember. And he draws you a card whenever you play an aura, and then I wouldn't say it's a combo kill, but there's just tons of synergy in that deck, and you just use hand disruption and quick creatures to overwhelm your opponent as quickly as possible. If you guys don't mind me choosing another deck to talk about, I was really excited about Winota. So when Ikoria came out, Winota became a thing. Basically, Winota, she's a 4-mana, human, and whenever you attack with a non-human creature, you get to look at your deck, and you get to put, is it 2 creatures, 3 creatures?
So it's top 8, up to 2 creatures, 2 humans.
Yeah, humans into play. All of them?
For each non-human creature. It's top 6 for each attacking non-human creature.
Yeah.
So, each attacking creature triggers the ability once, and for each trigger you get to look at the top 6 cards, pick a human, put it into play, tapped and attacking, and indestructible. Because why not?
Yes.
Yep.
That was a super fun card. I'm an aggro player. I was really excited about that. I ended up, buying most of the pieces for the deck. And, it's kind of fallen out of favor a little bit. I think that we get some better mana, which is nice, but still it's too much of a glass cannon. So it's a little bit easier to disrupt than some other strategies right now. But still, really cool deck idea, and I enjoyed playing it. So that's my choice for one of the new archetypes. So let's go back to Amit. What's another new deck that we got in 2020?
So I think this whole discussion would be like we have to mention Heliod Ballista decks, and it's basically mono white devotion, right? That's like the only deck that actually deployed this combo, right? As far as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the deck was playing just this normal mid range game. The deck had like Daxos, and it had Thraben Inspector, and Knight of the White Orchid too, but then it just had Heliod and Ballista, which put together can combo for infinite damage, which gave this deck a way to compete with all the other like big combo decks of the format, right? We mentioned both Breach and Inverter. And if this was just a mid-range deck with almost no disruption, mono-white wouldn't survive. But the fact that you always had to respect the combo kill meant that the games played out much differently than you would expect. Mm-hmm. The deck was really sweet. It saw some really cool innovations during the year. Especially when Yorion came out, like companions in general is a big topic, but Yorion made this deck like much better, and
especially before the change, right?
Yeah, we definitely want to touch on that, but I'm just agreeing. So Heliod also got to play a lot of the white kind of hate cards that no deck otherwise really got to play, because there just weren't very many white decks. So they got to play Gideon of the Trials, who was so good against the Inverter decks. Mm-hmm. They got to play things like Rest in Peace, which were good against some of the other combo decks. I remember there were things like Gideon's Intervention they were playing. Just some hate cards that no one else really got to play, and this deck got to.
Yeah, for sure.
You were touching on that point, though. I don't know if we want to say, the next, for me, if I'm going kind of timeline-based, the next big thing that changed was with the Ikoria drop and Companion Summer, basically, is what we had.
Was it Summer?
Could be. That was, May almost, April, May.
Yeah, late April, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't buy any packs just because, hey, look, it's pandemic.
But Ikoria?
But for a few months there, I think every format was kind of overrun by companions. Yeah. And if anyone's playing any kind of format of Magic, that should be what they remember from that part of the year.
For sure. I think that companions, and especially Lurus, were actually changing the power balance in the format. I mean, nothing could really budge, Heliod and Inverter and Lotus Breach from their top position in the format. And then Lurus came. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, Black-White Auras and Burn just became so fast and resilient. It was so hard to handle, right? Pretty kind of unfortunate, I think, that we didn't get to play a bit more of that format. I mean, the errata came really quickly. But basically, Burn and Strum Auras got Lurrus, which was insanely good. And as you said, Mono White Devotion got Yorion, which turned out to be one of the best companions, if not like the best right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely a funny place where, you know, all the other formats, companions were kind of ruining the format because they were 100% of the meta. There were a lot of companions in Pioneer, but, you know, the Inverter decks weren't really running them. The Lotus decks didn't really start running them until later. It was almost
either.
A better format. Yeah, it was almost the best format of the year is when we had all the companions before the errata. And you know, some of the other companions were seeing play, too. You know, there were plenty of Yorion decks. Mm-hmm. There were Gyruda decks at the point. There were, the occasional combo. Obosh. You would see Zerda showing up in the control decks as kind of a freebie. You saw some Gigantha decks like Spirits. Mm-hmm. They were just all over the place.
So, yeah, should we just kind of keep talking about other Ikoria-type decks? You know, we just talked about Esper Yorion the other week on the show with Musi, and, you know, that wasn't really... That really didn't show up until later, I would say. The whole current build, I would say, was more like summer that it showed up, not so much right when Ikoria dropped.
Yeah, I think it took some time for, like, once the companion, like, errata came in and the format kind of reverted back to Inverter, and then people kind of
after that
innovated a bit more.
So Poob, right, is the name.
Yeah, Esper Poob.
Esper Poob.
So I think for me, the other deck that we missed talking about a little bit and kind of came out of, especially when Lurrus was good, was the other more kind of fair Lurrus decks and a lot of Aristocrats decks. So, you know, we had white-black, I think it was Abzan Aristocrats, was a real standout deck from that time. Mm-hmm. We also had some of, I called them napkin decks. I know a few people were using that name, where it was like Lurrus plus Kroxa. So it was, either Grixis or it was black, white, red, Mardu. You know, some of those kind of decks where they would play Lurrus and it would be a Kroxa deck, and or they would play Jund and run, they had, Cheville? And then Oath of Nissa when that came out.
Yeah.
Those were all some really cool, kind of grindy, fun decks. And I think that Lurrus now being more of a fair card no longer enables those strategies. But I liked when those were really big decks. I think the only one that really survived that was kind of the Jund Aristocrats or some of the Bolas Citadel decks that we saw a little bit later in that season.
Well, is it like the Arcanist deck kind of still around?
That's true, yeah. Arcanist kind of fits into that category. And that does usually still run Lurrus, so that's probably the one that's survived as well.
Yeah, just because you get like the great removal and disruption.
Hmm. Yeah, Arcanist is for sure one of like the. It's probably the only Lurrus deck in Pioneer that's not an aggressive deck per se. Unfortunately, a bit not that good right now, but the deck was really good. Like it has some points where it just dominates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I do think we're like, if you mentioned Kroxa, and I think we're kind of overlooking Uro, which once like the companion hype kind of slowed down, right? Uro just became one of the best things to do in the format.
Definitely. And that's, I think, where we've come to into the fall and really almost continuing now into there. You know, we won't skip over Core 21 and Zendikar, but I don't feel like they had the same level of impact as Theros and then Ikoria. So, Theros was the big, I think, shakeup, and then Ikoria with companions was really strong. Once the companions were brought back, I think a lot less impact, and that's where we started to go deep on things like Uro, especially once a lot of the... So really, the other break point there is when the bans went through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we want to talk about that. Yeah, we could jump right to that. So, the other big thing that happened in this year...
We didn't talk about Lotus Breach.
It was kind of a... Yeah, we have kind of overlooked Lotus Breach. I mentioned it here and there, but yeah, that's the other big one that really broke out was Lotus Breach is yet another of these big combo decks, and not only hard to interact with, but also interacts on a very different plane than any of the other ones. You know, you need pretty specific removal to beat it. And even if you've got the right hate cards. If you give it enough time, it just wins anyways. You know, it'll bounce all of your hate cards and go off that turn. It has the mana to do that, or it'll just cast an Ugin and win the game.
If you guys don't want to talk about them, at least let me just make a, you know, list the rest of the decks that came out.
Okay, yeah, we're jumping around, but if you've got some more other big decks you want to mention,
well, like Sultai Reclamation. You know, Martin would be very angry if you didn't talk about that. So.
True. So that's one that comes a little later. When did Reclamation actually come out?
Now, Reclamation came out last year.
It's been out for a bit, yeah. So it's been out for a bit. It just never got...
But it was Temur.
It never really got that strong until...
It was Temur Reclamation. It was the Expansion Explosion, you know, whole setup. But then Sultai, basically you took the Sultai Delirium deck and Reclamation deck and you kind of put them together because Uro enabled, you know, these strategies to kind of... you know, build on that early game and then just take over late in the game.
So in a way, you're kind of jumping the gun in that I think those were all post-ban decks is where that really came up, is where we started to see things like Fires, where we started to see things like Reclamation, and we started to see a lot of Uro decks.
Okay.
Those were kind of the more fair decks that happened after we got rid of the impact of Thera. So we kind of have to finish that arc of the year of
so let's talk about bans, then we'll go back.
Companions were nerfed, everyone went back to playing combo. It was very, very strong, and then they said, okay, we've got to put an end to this. So Helia didn't go, but Ballista did. The Underworld Breach went, but the Thassa's Oracle didn't. The Lotus Field didn't. And Inverter went. So those were the big three, and then of course my favorite deck, Kefis, also got a mean little ban just for
It was your favorite deck.
It got caught in the crossfire. Oh yeah, it was a deck I was actually playing pretty much since the beginning of the format. You know, for a long time there it wasn't anything close to tier one, but I was playing it before the Oath of Nissa unban, and then Oath of Nissa got unbanned. I never even got to play it in paper and it got banned, so I was like, ah.
Yeah, so basically all these cards died for Thassa's Oracle's sins.
I firmly believe so. Absolutely. Thassa's Oracle is not an okay card.
Now, I mean, you could play all these decks would be fine back in Pioneer if we got rid of Thassa's Oracle.
Well, not Kethis probably,
and not Breach. Maybe probably. Not I think
probably not.
Like if we're just want to mention, I do think that Lotus Breach was probably it could be that it was the actual best deck of the format before the bannings. Like, I think the deck was extremely resilient. I remember having like a really tough matchup versus it, and it could win from the toughest spots. Like, the deck was that good. And
I do think it had more safety valves than something like Inverter did. So if everyone's just going to put four Damping Sphere in their sideboard, or if, you know, even four Damping Sphere in their main deck, it will never take off. Whereas you can't, there was no card that you could do that to be like, okay, I don't want Inverter to win, I'm going to put 10, whatever card it is. There just wasn't a card that could that easily shut him down.
I agree.
Yeah, that's true. That was the strength of Inverter, where you got to, like, I won enough games by ultimating Chase Prince Prodigy or playing Ashiok. You didn't actually have to combo off to win.
With Jace, can you mill yourself, or is that only the
opponent? Oh, no, I think it's only the opponent, but at that point, you just mill them out. I'm going to have to Google
this. yeah, it does win the game surprisingly quickly.
Ultimating Walkers is so much fun.
So, real quick, do you guys agree with all these bans? Like, looking back?
I think there's a discussion to be had what the format would look like if they had gone the other way on some of these bans. Like, if they had banned Faith Thassa's Oracle and not banned Inverter, if they had banned Heliod and not banned Ballista, and if they had banned... You know, I've said if they had banned Teferi, they probably could have gotten away with not banning Kethis. It would be a very different format. I think that's kind of a whole nother topic that we could discuss another time. But I do think the bans were... in my opinion, overall a net positive.
I mean, I was happy. I was tired of not playing games of Magic. I'm like, okay, you have another 10-minute turn. Go ahead. Yeah.
So I think, on the opposite side to you. I think the bannings were... I didn't like the bannings. I think they were... First of all, they were hitting, like, the top tier of the format in a way that like really harmed the identity of the format, and I think we're gonna touch that on that later, so I'm not gonna go into that. But I also think the decks were like quite biddable and they had really interesting gameplay to them, which I personally liked a lot, and I know many people do, but I do understand people not wanting to actually just face combo every round. So I think maybe like a halfway ban where they hit like the Oracle or something along those lines would have been better. But it's really hard to play these games of like, what would have been if?
So I think it comes down to pro players or grinders versus casual players. It was a great format for the pro players, for the streamers, for all those people. You know, like, combo is very interesting, especially seeing that high level of skill, the interactions between players is great. But if you're a regular person trying to take down Friday Night Magic or, you know, some other small events, and then, like, everyone's just playing these combo decks and you don't get to play Magic at all, then I think, you know, that kind of turns you off of the format. And I think that's kind of the hard decision or the hard situation that the Wizards got put in, and they had to make the choice just to kind of alienate all of these pro players that loved that type of format.
Yeah, I think they were in a really tough spot because, you know, a lot of streamers and like pros and grinders were saying that the format is great and they had a lot of fun, but then there just wasn't big attendance to the events. And at the end of the day, the format to live and succeed needs people to play it. And many people.
It needs to be fun and interesting.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, but it wasn't so much fun for everybody.
Yeah, and that's the classic problem of half the people liking one thing, half the other liking the other thing, and, like, someone's gonna lose. And this time it was, you know, us, the grinders, but I don't really see it that way. I mean, they banned the cards, and I think it would have been better to do something different, but I still think the format is interesting and engaging.
Yeah.
And
So, do you guys want to talk more about banned cards, or do you want to jump back to the cards or the decks that came after the bannings?
All right, so we could kind of jump to after the bannings, and this is also coming along the lines with where Core 21 came out, so we can say anything that really new showed up through that.
I mean, after the bannings, I was going to say Luka Fires is kind of a new deck that came out, in the summertime, I want to say, like maybe June?
Yeah, so in line with when those bannings happened, I think that a lot of what was kind of very strong in Standard, very strong in Historic, people decided to go and start trying in Pioneer. Mm-hmm. You know, we did see a little bit more people playing Winota. We saw those things like Luka Fires. Mm-hmm. We saw more of the Reclamation decks first starting to pop up.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Just like once the combo decks like released their grip on the format, people could start playing some slower decks. They would have gotten punished really badly by all the other combo decks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Uro started to become more prominent, and Jeskai Luka was picking up because suddenly you could cheat Agent into play. Mm-hmm. And just like random aggressive decks could just play them. You could play Gruul, you could play Winota, you could play Spirits again.
Spirits.
So basically all these tap out decks. It's fine to tap out because you're not going to lose to the combo on the next turn.
Exactly. Niv-Mizzet, by the way, as you mentioned before, became really, really big.
Is that a tap out deck?
Niv-Mizzet for sure.
Slam.
Yeah.
Five mana sorcery, five mana creature. Absolutely.
So, Winota, Luka, and what we said, Sol Tyrek, those are the decks that came about right about at the time of the bannings. So should we move on to like Zendikar, when Zendikar came out? I mean, did M21 really create any new decks?
Yeah, I think we should mention Mono Green Devotion. It wasn't exactly M21. Like, two things happened, right? You mentioned Oath of Nissa got unbanned. This happened a bit before the bannings of the combo decks. Mm-hmm. And then M21 also got us Llanowar Visionary, right? That's the card, like the mana elf and draw card.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which is not, I wouldn't say it like made Mono Green Devotion the deck it is, but it was definitely a welcome addition.
Well, along with that was Elder Gargaroth.
Yes. And yeah, Elder Gargaroth for sure. Voracious Hydra is from... Is it from before?
That one was from before, because I remember that was very strong at the start
of the format. Yeah, Gargaroth is actually subtly one of the strongest cards in Pioneer, I think. As long as you're playing a fair game, Gargaroth is... just dominates the game.
So yeah, that... Other than that, I can't think of any other really big cards that shook up the format from M21. Like, we had some good cards that kind of fit into some other strategies, but nothing that kind of created its own thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was mostly just like slotting some cards into new decks. And I actually think M21 was a bit before the bannings, right? Because it had Eliminate. And I remember playing Eliminate in Inverter. So I think that also like kind of slowed down the impact of M21.
Yeah.
But then just Kailuka became one of the strongest decks in the format for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely was. And that's one I don't know if I can give a clear answer of like why it dropped off. It's a deck that always seemed strong to me in testing. I just never really wanted to go deep on it because it's a little bit... it feels very swingy, you know, when you win so huge, but the games where you lose, you just never really get going.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest reasons the deck has fallen off recently, I mean, it had a resurgence like probably a month ago, and now it's completely off the map because of Oops All Spells. This is my thought here.
Let's talk about that next. Yeah. So let's move on to Zendikar, Oops All Spells.
Yeah, that's got to be the deck of Zendikar Rising.
Now you said you're enjoying this right now, right, Amit?
Well, I was enjoying it until people started playing main deck Lanterns. yeah, it got that bad. So I think Zendikar was actually really impactful for Pioneer. Because, three cards, right? So first of all, it's like... the double face cards, the model double face cards. So I get to, you have like these spells that have the other side, which is land, but the cards don't count the spell as lands in your deck. So you have two cards, Blustered Spy and Undercity Informer, which just lets you pay 4 mana and mill your entire deck, which doesn't lead to good Magic games, but it's a pretty good strategy if you want to win games quickly. So that's one of the biggest impacts of Zendikar, because just like it's a completely new archetype. It's probably one of the best combo decks in Pioneer right now. And then two more cards that I would like to mention are like Omnath and Roiling Vortex, which we can talk about. But so do you want to talk about Oops?
Yeah, I was going to ask real quick. So
yeah.
Dredge was a thing before Oops All Spells. So is it really a new deck? Is it really a new strategy? Or did this, you know, is it just a new, how can I say, a new coating of paint on the Dredge deck?
It definitely is for me. You know, I played both decks a fair bit. The Dredge deck was a very much, it preyed on fair decks because it had card advantage that you just couldn't interact with. You know, you couldn't, removal spells were bad against it. Discard spells were bad against it. Oops is definitely much more of an all-in combo deck. It doesn't do the, you know, just playing a bunch of little creatures and swinging with them. It's all in the one turn for winning the game.
So that's all I wanted to ask.
Oops is definitely closer to Lotus Breach than it is to
Dredge.
And by the way, the deck does employ Thassa's Oracle in the sideboard to go around hate. I mean, the card is still busted.
Very importantly, it's a very key part of that strategy.
I'm telling you, they should have banned Oracle, but they wanted to sell packs, so we have to wait until after Theros leaves Standard. But that's another conversation. So what were the other decks? Omnath, yes. 4-color, 5-color.
Yeah, Omnath is great.
Yeah, Omnath is... So the 4-color Omnath, right? It's like all the colors other than black. And and people like were hyped. When it was spoiled, people knew this card was strong. But then it didn't quite catch, like it didn't quite make it in Pioneer at first, because people tried to jam it into like Reclamation decks or into like Band Control decks. And the And the car doesn't really work that way. You have to be literally around it. So Omnath was like on not very prominent until recently. But now it's been picking up. Right now, I actually think right now, like talking today, Omnath is probably the best deck in Pioneer.
I mean, it's strange. I mean, I always kind of mixed it in there with like Niv-Mizzet and the Reclamation decks. So it's interesting to see it finally kind of getting its own strategy now, focusing more on Omnath.
Its own spotlight, yeah.
Yeah, I think people are realizing they don't need to mess with cards like Fae of Wishes and Felidar Retreat. They can just play Omnath and a bunch of like draw fives and even some time walk effects. And mm-hmm. that's just going to be enough to win the game.
Yeah, somebody was talking about Part the Water Veil being added into it.
Yeah, Musi was. Yeah.
They're just like, it's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, when you
what
think
was the other deck? Sorry.
Yeah, when you think you get like to untap and maybe like stop the snowball that they're building, and then they go like Water Veil with the kicker thing where they get the 9/9 or the 6/6 and you're just like dead on the spot.
Yeah.
I think it's time to play Damping Sphere again. Now, what was the other deck you were talking about?
So it wasn't actually a deck. It was Whirling Vortex, which is... It is from Zendikar, right?
It's from Zendikar.
And this is like a 2-mana enchantment, right? Red and 1. It has, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, this enchantment pings them for 1. So, like, take 1 damage. And then for 1 red mana, you can pay to make your opponent not be able to gain life for this turn. And I think this enchantment almost single-handedly made Burn like tier 1 in Pioneer at this point.
Okay. Made it better. So it's not so much a new archetype, but it's more of a renewed or reinvigorated archetype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely gave it play against some of its biggest problems, you know, against the Uro decks, against Omnath especially. That single-handedly makes it a very difficult matchup for Omnath.
I would love to, like, take a look at that Dagger Burn deck again and add this into it.
I don't know if that's quite what you want. You also don't have Felidar.
No, we don't. Darn.
Dagger Burn?
Okay.
Oh, let me learn you quick. On Dagger Burn.
What was the dagger part of it?
So it's like the dagger that puts a 2/0/2 into play, and it plays Panharmonicon, so they get double or triple tokens. And then,
yeah, so I think it was Dousing Dagger and then Curse of something. Curse of Death's Hold, it was one of the curses from Omnicat. Like whenever the opponent gets a creature into play, they lose a life and you gain a life. And then it would play the that Dousing Dagger that makes two creatures under their control, like two plant creatures.
Yeah.
So you do that with like a Panharmonicon into play, they get four creatures, and then each of those drains them for two. It wasn't good.
No, it wasn't good. It was hilarious.
It was good because it had the Saheeli combo in it.
I think it had Akroyan Horse in there as well. You know, give them the 0/4, and then they get all these like 1/1 tokens. Yeah,
that is
it was
sweet.
So bad, so bad. Yeah,
but it's so sweet.
Okay. So we're not bringing that back. Yeah. We're not bringing that back.
Not bringing that back.
Do you guys want to move on to our top cards of the year, or is there anything else you want to talk about deck wise?
Ooh,
I do want to mention. I think we kind of skipped over it. I think the Triumphs were a really big addition to the format. Mm. We were talking about like Jeskai Lucca being a thing and Sultai and Timur and all these decks. Like, the mana in Pioneer is pretty bad for a lot of decks, and the Triumphs are doing a really good job like pulling those decks together.
Yeah.
Also, Omnath.
Yeah, I think one of the most telling things I've heard on the podcast this year, we had Musi on a couple weeks ago, and we were asking like, hey, what do you think the Esper control deck needs most? And we were expecting to hear like, oh yeah, it needs Path to Exile. It needs, you know, white removal. That's what we thought the format needs. And he's like, no, we need an Esper Triumph. Mm-hmm. We need the Triumphs for the ally colors. Mm-hmm. They're that good. They're that impactful. So I could definitely see the Triumphs being one of the big cards this year as kind of a low-key standout.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can play Fatal Push and Uro in the same deck, or you can play Omnath to begin with, is mostly due to the Triumphs. The Triumphs are that good. They do a lot of the things you want them to do. And they're really good design. And we need the rest of them.
Mm.
Although we do also need an aggro comparison. You know, you can't really play a three-color aggro deck. You can't play a Triome and then try and cast, Mantis Rider or something
so
like that.
So we need the modal cards for the lands. We need the fast lands. Yeah, we need all that
stuff.
Like
the fetches. No, not that.
No, the fast lands, like the ally-colored fast lands would be really nice. And also, yes. I think we're getting in Kaldheim the rest of the cycle of the pathways. Mm-hmm. So
yes, those have been released. We have seen those.
That's gonna be great.
Yeah, that's gonna be really great. I can't wait to build a really bad unlicensed disintegration deck and crush the ground. I'm gonna give it a shot though.
Gotta.
So let's do like a top five. So your top cards of the year, let's just have everybody kind of go down their list real quick instead of going one to one, and you know, you can just give a short explanation, a short reason why you think this deserves a top five spot. So who wants to go first, Emmett or
I've got some, but as we've been talking, I'm kind of like wait a minute. So yeah, go ahead. Why don't we let our guest start first if he's ready for
what's
it.
Your top five and why?
So, okay, it's not going to be very innovative what I'm going to say, but the first one is Thassa's Oracle. I really think the card, it for sure dominated the format before the bannings, and even now it's like whenever I see a new potential combo deck, it's like, how can I put Thassa's Oracle in this and win the game? The card is really, really good. It's really hard to interact with. The second one was definitely like Heliod, which has been like, and the third one is Breach. I mean, both were so like the embodiment of Pioneer for me for like 8 months roughly was Inverter, Heliod, and Lotus Field. And these are the cards that like made those decks what they were. So these are like my top three cards, not inspiring, but I think that's like top three cards. And then the next two cards are Uro. I think Uro is one, like, probably the best thing you can do in Pioneer if you're not killing your opponent fast. And I really don't know if I want it banned or not. That's, like, a really interesting topic. I think the card is really strong. Whenever I escape it, I remember how busted it is. And the card is just super good. And I'm going to cheat on the fifth one, and I'm going to say Companions. They were just they were so impactful for the format. Like, decks, even after the errata, people still play Yorion and Lurus, and these are, like, big components of why these decks are good. And these are actual, like, tier 1 decks. So I think Companions were, like, really big here.
Okay. Kevin, do you want to go, or should I go while you're still...
I had a very similar list. I did have Uro, of course, on there. I had Lurus and Yorion. I called them out kind of specifically. Mm-hmm. And since I didn't clump them together, I figured I can't have Breach and Heliod in there. So I cut both of them, and I went with the Triomes, actually, I think is what my last... my probably at number five, but I'm going to put them on there. So I'm saying Triomes, Yorion, Uro, Thassa's Oracle, Lurus, in that order.
Okay. My top five, I also agree. I think Lurus has to be in there just because, you know, black-white auras and also, like, the burn deck. I think it just enables a couple more strategies because it's available. Again, Yorion as well. You got Esper Poo, but I think there's a couple other decks that can play Yorion. Like, we had it in the mono-white, you know, Ballista deck for a while there. And, of course, yeah, you can't say that Uro is not one of the top five. Totally agree. I mean, it fits in like so many different decks, but this is where I kind of diverge from you guys. I had Kroxa as one of my top five cards just because, you know, you had it in the black red deck, but it also kind of, you know, just it enables Fatal Push easily. It's I love it, of course, in my Waste Not deck and my Jank deck. It's an all around good card, and it matches Uro pretty well. You know, if everybody else is playing Uro, I want to play Kroxa to kind of negate that advantage of, you know, a card that they're getting. And then the other card that I had in my top five was Shark Typhoon. So I thought this was a great addition for control decks, especially to have, you know, a way where they can just win by just playing counter spells. So it kind of added a whole new, strategy to the formats where before, you know, Control had to have like this planeswalker that did something, or it had to have a creature that won them the game, and now they can just sit back and say nope the whole time and just win with sharks.
I was going to say, that's probably one of the cards we've most overlooked in our conversation so far. It is my top 10. I don't know if we'd wanted to do a top 10, but, you know, I had Breach, Heliod, Shark Typhoon. And the other two that I'd probably look at would be Elder Gargaroth, and then I feel like Shadow's Verdict is my special mention. So that's another Zendikar one. I just think that's had one of the bigger impacts of any sweepers we've seen recently, as just being a really strong card.
Yeah, Gargaroth would definitely be my top 10, but I don't know if I'd be my top 5.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think all those cards are really impactful. I also think Shark Typhoon, as you mentioned, is probably like number 6 on the list, and only because this list is really that busted. Shark Typhoon also, like, notably, it feeds Uro. Like, it's a win con, but at the same time, it makes it easier to Uro, which is, I don't know if it's healthy for the format, but it's definitely a really good combination.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you can play a deck where all of your win cons cantrip. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I think we worked our way through most of this year of Pioneer. We talked about the beginning of the year, what it was like. We went over all the decks that happened throughout all the sets that were released. So let's talk about where Pioneer is now. Like, how is Pioneer ending the year in 2020? So who wants to go first? I mean, Amit, you've been playing a lot, so maybe you are the foremost expert.
So I actually want to go first because... So my conception of Pioneer today is really shaped by the way I see, like, the bannings of the combo decks, which makes me really interesting to see, like, what would you guys say about the format right now? Because the way I see it, when they banned, like, the 3 combo decks, Pioneer kind of lost its identity, right? It went into this identity crisis, and it emerged as some kind of this, like, old standard decks that, like, people hated, and now they play in Pioneer. And I think in this sense, like, the identity of the format is has been kind of harmed by these bannings. But I do think that the format is still unique, and I think it's going to become more and more interesting the more time passes. But I think we're going to talk about this in a bit, right?
Yeah, the new about identity the future. And stuff like that, so.
Yeah, so, yeah, basically I think today, like, people are not that high on Pioneer, especially not as they were, like, at the beginning of the year, and I think that's because the format kind of lost its way. But I think, like, slowly and surely, it's going to like, find its way back to, like, uniqueness and being interesting and fun.
I mean, of course, we have to talk about the pandemic stopping people from playing paper Magic. Of course, do you think that Pioneer would be in a better place now if people were still playing it in paper Magic?
I think so, for sure. I know of a lot of people, like, that I talk to, Magic players that have paper Pioneer decks, and they just never got to play them. And even you guys, I think you said, right? Like, Kevin did a Kephis deck.
I was sitting there with Kephis. Yep, exactly.
Exactly. So I think that's, like, another big issue for Pioneer. I think that's, like, you know, the pandemic just stops the GPs. And also, by the way, Historic competing it on Arena probably also hurts the format's popularity a bit.
Yeah. It's almost the same thing, basically.
It's getting there,
And I was listening to the Goldfish podcast yesterday, and they were saying how even if Pioneer comes out on Arena, it's going to be very inaccessible just because you have to get all these wild cards and things like that, and it's incredibly difficult to dust all those other wild cards and all those other cards to get those wild cards that you need for Pioneer. So Historic's going to have this huge... How can I say this huge start on them, because it's been around.
I'm worried about that. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to, if I wanted to be a new player and to get into Pioneer on Arena, how do you do that? Like, how do you even go? I mean, even if you wanted to spend $250, would you be able to get all the wild cards you want? Like, there's no real way to just even buy your way in if you wanted
to. If Pioneer is going to do really well on Arena quickly, I think they have to deal with that, you know, that dusting system, you know, that wild card system. I have so many uncommons and commons and even mythic rares I haven't used just because, you know, I need rares. I need those land cycles, mm-hmm. you know, and things like that.
Maybe I'm pessimistic, but I wouldn't hate it if they just, you know, hit rock bottom and they realize they need a new model because the current one's not working for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, COVID, another thing I wanted to say, you know, people, I think when people go to FNMs and people do like their local game store events, I think people bring a lot more jank, a lot more fun decks with them. And I think that's what the format's missing right now. I feel like, you know, we're getting all of our decks and all our deck techs from grinders and pros. And that's great if you want to be competitive, but there's not decks that people are, oh man, I saw my friend play this card and I totally want to play that deck now. That's how I usually played when I was, you know, here in Japan. I'd just take some random jank that I've been working on, and my friends were like, what? That card works in Pioneer? I'm like, yeah, try it out. And then, like, a couple of people would try it out the next week.
Yeah.
So, end of the day, I don't think I got to say the kind of final, mm-hmm. like, I do think that it is in a pretty good place. I still like where Pioneer is. I'm still enjoying playing Pioneer right now, mm-hmm. and I think there's still places that it's fun to innovate. Yeah. It does feel like formats just get solved so much faster when only Edmodo is the only real place people are playing competitively. Yeah. So it feels like, especially with right now being by far the longest break between new sets, it feels like it hasn't changed in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, a little bit of a rut. I wish that there was some more space to explore, but I don't think that it's in a bad place. I think there's a lot of fun that can be had playing Pioneer.
Mm. Emmett, anything else?
I just really wanted to say that the point you brought up about, like, just having fun in the format, I mean, from my perspective, I usually try, you know, to play, like, the winning decks, right? Because I'm a grinder, mm-hmm. I'm a streamer, that's what I do. But yeah. I also find myself, like, wanting to try rogues, like various decks, which would be awesome, and I do plan on doing that. And I think that, like, I think the point is really good because when you go to the, like, Pioneer Leagues, it's not like the modern leagues. People don't play nonsense in the Pioneer Leagues. Mm-hmm. They play tier 1 decks. They play like tier 1.5 decks. And you're going to see tons of grinders. And that's like probably driving people away from the format. Mm-hmm. And that's... Yeah. I'm not sure if there's a good fix for that other than making the format more... have more options, which I think is like a lot about the mana, as we mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, when the whole reason to play is to win, then you're going to have these types of formats and this type of unhappiness from the players, I think.
And maybe that's a problem with, you know, Modo. I don't think Modo's, you know, economy is any better, really. You know, it does very much feel like you shouldn't be playing Modo unless you're kind of playing to win.
Yeah.
So if that's where most of the people are playing Pioneer right now, there is no great place for like I love the that mono red kind of ramp deck. And I wouldn't play that in a league because it'll just get stomped. But like, I would love to go to an FNM with that deck. I would 100% buy the rest of the pieces I need and go play that in FNM and hope to run into Upsell spells.
Yeah, there needs to be more reward for having fun.
They just go cleansing wildfire, Thought-Nazir, and you can't win ever.
Yeah. Hey, Amit,
two mana Stone Rain that draws a card.
Hey. Emmett, real quick, I wanted to ask you about the meta at the end of the year. What would you say? How did the meta game end at the end of this year?
So I think right now the way Pioneer looks is basically I'd say four decks are pretty good. So I mentioned Oops All Spells before, but I think the meta is becoming really hateful towards it. I mean, I played it in the challenge last week, and mm-hmm. I actually faced like main deck Lanterns. Like, people are prepared, so I think that, like while it's really good, it's probably a bit on the decline. Omnath, with, like, Part of Water Veil and Genesis Ultimatum and Cobra, is, I think, the best deck in the format, and probably followed closely by Burn and Mono Green Devotion. So, basically, like, four hyper-proactive decks right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've heard that echoed from a lot of the guests we've had on, that reactive decks are at a very weak place right now. Mm-hmm. For me, just adding to that, I think that the biggest kind of weak point in the balance of the meta is with Burn being the only aggro deck, I feel like. Mm. You know, we've kind of lost a lot of the mono black. Yep. We've lost a lot of the Auras decks. We've lost anything like Winota. It feels like Burn is doing all of the heavy lifting yep. for being an aggro deck. So if you're not facing Burn, you're not facing an aggro deck in the format.
Yeah, I think Auras are still out there, but like mono black aggro is a deck that I would love if it would be good, but you just have to work so hard for every win. It's not that Burn.
Yeah.
Like, I tried a deck. I tried it. And you have to, like, there's no room for mistakes, and your deck wouldn't, like, bail you out of a lot of spots like Burn does. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
So let's just give him Copter back or something. No, because that would just go right into mono red with Lurrus, yeah. and it would be amazing.
I just want to say, I love Copter. I even think the power level is fine for Pioneer. The problem is it's colorless. It's just going to be everywhere. And that's just yeah. not going to be yeah. fun, right?
It's also, you know, something that you know, me and Ryan played a lot of Frontier. The problem is that decks aren't equally able to answer it. So Fatal Push decks have no problem with Copter. Mm-hmm. But if you're a white deck, none of the white removal kills Copter because yeah. it's, you know, sorcery speed or it hits creatures on. Yeah, it just doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we talked enough about that. I don't want to keep you guys here too much longer. So we got a couple more points I wanted to talk about and then we can finish up. So this is kind of like the big question that, you know, Amit's been waiting to answer. And that is, how would you describe Pioneer's current identity amongst the other formats? You know, like where does it fit right now? I mean, we all know like, you know, Standard is like the place for all new players to kind of start playing Magic. You know, Legacy is like where people that have been playing for a long time can do really powerful things. Where does Pioneer fit? What is its identity?
So, as I said, I think right now Pioneer is in this weird spot where it's like a ghost of Standard Past, right? It has Reclamation and Jeskai Fires, and it has Omnath, and like basically all the cards that got banned from Standard and people don't like. And I think that's going to... And I hope this is going to change. Like, I think the perception is going to change because I think the identity Pioneer should strive towards is of a format where you can do, like, you can do really strong stuff that you couldn't do in Standard because, like, the cards weren't there or the format was too hostile. But it's not as busted as Modern where you actually get, like, none games, right? Where you actually get killed on like turn 4 or like Blood Moon and stuff like that. So I think Pioneer should be like this middle ground between really powerful things, but like still playing games of Magic that resemble like classic Standard games.
Mm.
Or maybe probably a bit stronger, right? And I think the format, like the more cards we get, it's just naturally gonna trend this way as long as Wizards keep banning like the really strong combo decks.
Yeah. How about you, Kevin? Do you have any comments on the identity of Pioneer?
I think that's reasonable. Yeah, I'm going to echo what Amit said. I do think that the one thing I'd like, though, is that I do like it when things that are strong and Standard can be playable in Pioneer, even if they're not the only thing. I like it that they can be playable. Because that means that, you know, your decks don't just disappear into a void when they stop being Standard rotation. You know, rotation happens and, hey, now you've got a powerful card that's still good in Pioneer. And Modern doesn't do that at all. If you're trying to go from Standard to Modern, it just slips into a void and it's gone.
Agreed on that.
So for me, I don't feel like it's so much the problem that we've seen, the power creep, and, you know, we have all these, you know, great decks from Standard past. I kind of feel like Pioneer is the format of orphaned cards. We have all these powerful cards that are really strong, and they just don't have enough, how can I say, they don't have enough enablers, they don't have enough supports. Like, you know, why play anything from Tarkir, or why play anything from... I don't know, Origins or something like that, when you're just going to get a better card from, you know, a more recent set. And that's kind of like we talked about with Gavin last week, you know, how, you know, when they're designing cards, maybe up until now, they haven't really been designing cards for Pioneer. And I'm hoping going forward from here that Pioneer will get cards designed specifically for it. So it makes all of those cards that we had from, you know, Tarkir block matter. It makes all those cards that we had in, I don't know, Kaladesh matter, you know, for example. So that's kind of like the identity that I see it as right now. It's just, it has so much potential, but it's lacking the ways to unlock that potential.
Yeah, and I think this is naturally going to change the more cards we get, like for Pan, like in general, just the more sets we see, mm-hmm. the more we have options to, like, you know, use cool synergies with, like, old cards. Maybe we see more energy, maybe we see better mana for the decks, and then you exactly. can start playing. Yeah, exactly. I agree.
All right, real quick, what is your deck of the year and why? So next topic.
I think I already gave mine away, is that I wanted to say it's, you know, I'm going to say Niv-Mizzet. I don't know if that's an appropriate mm-hmm. one, because I think there was a lot of good things. But for me, it was kind of a, you know, up and down of the year. Niv-Mizzet stayed with me through the whole the way. It was there the whole time. So that's going to be my my pick.
Okay, how about you, Amit? What's your deck of the year?
Do you mean like deck in something I like, something?
Yeah, something you like. Like what could perform very well, something you enjoyed a lot. Yeah, anything so like that.
I think I have to say Vampires. As I said, mm-hmm. I did reasonably well with it, like before Inverter, and then after the bannings, it did me some gave me some nice weekends, some nice runs, and I just really enjoyed the deck and how it plays, and like, it incorporates a bunch of cards that I love. I just really like the deck. I think it's sweet. I wish it would be more playable in the format.
And I'm going to agree with Kevin here. I think five-color Niv-Mizzet is the deck of the year. And also Claudio kind Ooh. Of sold me on.
Maybe I need to change it then. can't agree. We gotta have something else.
Well, here. I also thought that the Spy was another really good card. Ooh, so okay. I was either going to do 5-color Niv-Mizzet or the Spy, you know, or the Oops All Spells Wait, deck. I think those are
Oops All Spells, yeah.
two really interesting decks that came about this year, and the ones that, you know, how can I say, kind of shook things up. Or I guess I say the Spy really shook things up, and 5-color Niv-Mizzet just because you can play it in so many different ways. There's so many, you know, different answers for cards in the format.
Also, when you see Claudio just win everything with it, you have to imagine there's something good in the deck.
Yeah. I give him my respect.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, so last topic for today. What's your prediction for 2021? What does Ooh. Pioneer have to look forward to? Anybody want to go first?
I think there will be something else that breaks. I'm going to say, you know, maybe this is an easy call, but I think something else big is going to get banned. Something like an Uro or a Teferi.
Mm. Okay, so that's your prediction. How about you?
Maybe that's a weak one.
How about you, Amit? What's one of your predictions for 2021?
I'd say that I think we're going to see... I think, like, that people are going to see that once we get better mana for the format... Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see tons of new decks, and I think we're going to see the format change a lot. I'm really happy about Kaldheim, because I've been wanting to try some Rakdos decks, and we might get good mana now. And that's like a big thing.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I think not so much with the lands, we get more balanced colors. I feel like it's kind of heavily favored towards green and blue and maybe red right now, and we need to, you know, get black and white kind of need to join in the fun. So I'm hoping for next year that we get maybe more removal as well. That's my prediction. Like hopefully we'll finally get that white removal spell that is almost as good as Fatal Push. So that's my prediction for 2021.
All right. That's probably going to bring us to the end of our show here. Thank you guys. This has been a nice, fun recap of the year. I think that, you know, I liked going through the history. I always love talking the history of Magic. And you know, it's been an interesting year. I'm looking forward to playing more Pioneer. So it's definitely something that's keeping me interested, keeping you guys interested. And as long as you guys want to hear us talk about it, we're going to continue talking about Pioneer. So if you guys liked this show, if you like hearing from our content, anything that you want to say to us, if you hate us, whatever it is, go ahead and tweet out. You can find me and Ryan at MTG Pioneer on Twitter, the one and only at MTG Pioneer. You can also find Ryan himself.
You can find me at Yoshwenky, which is Yoschwenky. And again, I just want to say, if you enjoyed the show, please make sure you follow us. And, you know, we have a link to our Discord as well, so feel free to join our Discord channel so you can chat with us and give us comments about, you know, any topic that we talked about on the show. And, Amit, how about you? Any shout-outs or any promotions this time?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter too, at EkerosMTG, that's EkerosMTG, and I also stream 4 to 5 times a week under the same handle on Twitch, and yeah, just having fun being here as usual, really awesome.
Yeah, let us know next time you're doing some Pioneer stuff, we'll tweet you out.
Yeah, I'm taking a short break from the format, just short, yeah. Promise. Ooh. And then I'm going to be back in full force.
I'm guessing once the spoilers come out, you'll be back in full force.
Yeah, we just got a pod card I'm looking at right here while we're recording this. That could be good.
Pod card, you said?
Yeah, we'll talk about it after the show. All right, guys, thanks. That's going to wrap us up. Thank you all for listening. We are, one last time, we are the First Pioneers Podcast. We look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online. Your First Pioneers, signing off.